It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And yes, we are off and running. It is a brand new broadcast week, albeit a foreshortened one. It's Thanksgiving week, 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And it is, in point of fact, specifically the 20th day of November, 2017. And if you'd like to be part of the madcap, merry, multimedia, wacky, zany, real-time extravaganza that is The Horn chat room, well, just run on over to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click on chat room, pick yourself a free screen name and a free password, and jump right in to the merriment. There you will be greeted by Anatole, the likes of Anatole and Earther and Silent R. Lamar and B.T. Blom, and of course, longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space to become man... No, he did not fold space this evening. That's how elusive spacing guild masters can be. And also by midweek utility, pinch hit, and all-around great guy, chat room moderator Steve from Georgia Stan. So we're up and running. I know we're live on headon.live. I got a sneaking suspicion we're not live on White Rose. Anybody want to tell me that? If anybody's got White Rose, I'd love to know it. I know Ben worked on it this weekend. I don't know if he had any success. Hey, there's Squeaky wandering into the room. So, happy Thanksgiving week, everybody. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And just a program reminder. The broadcast schedule for this week is program tonight, program tomorrow. No program Wednesday, no program Thursday, and then we'll have a two-hour Friday on the Front Porch on Friday, followed by 2 hours of the Mike Malloy program from 9 to 11 Eastern Friday night. Okie doke. Cool. So then back to whatever passes for normal around here. Stand by. Sorry, early mid-show communique from FERC. All right, then. Where was I? Oh, yeah. Big thanks to go out. We closed the program with a deficit over the weekend, or on Friday evening. And I'm happy to say that the overnight crowd, our hearty band of subscribers who often keep disasters from entailing, made up for a day's worth of fundraising, and consequently, thanks go out over the course of Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night. Thanks go out to our buddy Glenn in New York. Thank you, Glenn. As well as to our buddy Tosh in Maryland. And to Kenda in Missouri. And to Joseph in Ohio. And to Robert in Iowa. As well as to Dave, David in Ohio. Thanks are also due to our folks at Cat Mountain Arts in Oregon, as well as to Grace. Hi, Grace. Thank you in New York. As well as Kurt in Oklahoma. Tough day in Stillwater this weekend, Kurt. Sorry, man. To Charlene in Rhode Island. And to Jamie in California. Make sure I got everybody here. I feel like I'm missing somebody. Oh, yeah, there they are. Thanks going out to Ralphs in Wisconsin. And can I just say that at least Wisconsin did make it into the top four. So Clemson's still there, but never mind. Thanks to Bernice. Thank you very kindly, Bernice. And finally, thanks to Carl. Thank you very kindly, Carl. So those are the thank yous due to, all of our subscribers. Look, I'll just say this again. Someday, if we've ever got the equivalent of $410 a month subscribers, I can stop doing this. If you'd like to become a subscriber, and, you know, frankly, I'm not kidding when I say that we lost subscribers as a result of the great purity wars of 2016 into 2017. If you would like to become a subscriber, it's real easy. There's two ways. One is simply to go to the Contribute tab at headonradionetwork.com and click the little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation and put $10 in it and move on. And that's just set it and forget it. If you absolutely despise PayPal, then you can also use the Patreon campaign. Patreon, patreon.com/Bob Kincaid, and you'll have it that way. You'll be a subscriber that way. And in the case of Patreon, everything comes out on the first of the month. Doesn't matter what day of the month. So you can just first of the month, done. And if we ever get to the point where if we ever get to the point where there's, you know, those $410 a month subscribers, this stuff will disappear. Not the program. Everything but the thanks will disappear. By the way, 5x5 in Vermont on headonlive. Thank you, Ron, in the still far frozen north. And I gotta think it probably is kind of cold. yeah, Marty, thanks. Stop helping. Marty says, subscribe, really? And risk impurifying our precious bodily fluids? Well, maybe just take one for the team, Marty. I don't know. I'm getting messages. You're on White Rose, and that's a big negatory on White Rose. And then Keith told me TuneIn is down, and then tells me, nope, TuneIn is now working. We're also live at FYINation.com because Thomas. Okay, so Silent R. Lamar says, that damn moose and squirrel, especially the squirrel with the gun. Yes, gun, no nuts. All right. It's the first day of a broadcast week. That happens to be a Monday. Yes, the 20th of November, 2017. And you know what? By no later than like noon on Sunday, I felt like we had enough morons for a couple of moron Mondays. But you gotta get through them quick because they don't have a long shelf life because there's always another moron coming along. Okay, thank you, Mark. Tune in working. Marty says, White Rose's HQ MP3 stream appears to be working again with about a 10 to 20 second difference. Well, that ain't bad latency under the circumstances. Thank you. Midweek pinch hit utility chat room moderator and all around great guy Steve from Georgia Stan says, tune in working now, Bob. And I mean White Rose. Yeah. So yay. Yay, okay? So anyway, here's the upshot. Because of all those subscribers that I just listed, I can happily announce that tonight the fundraising goal is only $175. Yay! Isn't that nice? Now, can we make it not be $375 tomorrow night? Can we just keep up? Yes. Okay. Program note courtesy of Silent R. Lamar, the turkeys are packing too. Oh, and that reminds me. I'm going to nominate myself as a moron. Meanwhile, many members of the Horn Family Community Congregation are saying, well, duh. So I told you there would be a test turkey, and I put out a Facebook post about it over the weekend. There was much hilarity over the turkey. It was just a little 10-pound affair. There was much hilarity about the turkey sitting on the Foster's can. A Foster's can is the perfect size can for beer can turkey, by the way. I established that. It was properly thawed. Ferg saw to that. And so I built up the fire. It was a beautiful Saturday. Saturday was a great day for doing this. It was kind of gray and leaden. Wrote a poem, but I got to I just turned up the studio monitors a little bit. It wasn't particularly cold, and watched intermittently and mostly listened to the Mountaineers. Really, really take it on the chin to Texas. When the Mountaineers have rotten luck, it's not just any rotten luck. It's the really nasty rotten luck. I had never seen, and I think this is the term for it now, it may be even a medical term, I had never seen, and ESPN tried not to show it a whole lot, I'd never seen Joe Theismann finger. Remember Joe Theismann's leg, Monday Night Football, Lawrence Taylor, all of that, if you're of a certain age? Well, in stretching out for the goal line with the ball in his hand, West Virginia's quarterback, they call him Touchdown Jesus, drove his finger into the turf. And when he got up, they briefly showed it, and his finger on his throwing hand, mind you, his finger was perpendicular to all the other fingers. My stomach turned. And then the tide did, too. Because the Mounties wound up losing, 28-14? And largely because our second team All-American quarterback got his finger sideways. Ugh, I don't even like thinking about it. So I listened to that and did the test turkey. And I got to tell you, the test turkey was what a test turkey is for. It demonstrated holes in my technique and was, in fact, a failure. This is largely because, Moran, I had almost everything together by the time it was time to start cooking, except my digital probe thermometer, which I promptly went looking for and did not find. So I kept the fire down around 225 degrees, and because of things like cross-contamination and just the general nasty conditions under which poultry are produced in the United States, I opted for more and not less, and it wound up getting overdone. But what was edible was really, really good. And it was all edible. It's just that the turkey breast itself was drier than a snake's belly in a wagon rut. And, the skin was crispy and delicious, though. So there was a lot. There'll be a water pan next time. And, yeah, a new probe thermometer. That really, really is the key to the turkey program. Well, Earther says, I've never heard of a test turkey. I'd never done a turkey on this new grill. And so I didn't know, and I'm glad I did. Because, like I said, it exposed flaws and reminded me to go and get a new probe thermometer. Yay. And I got a feeling that the one I do for the big family feast, which will be a considerably larger bird, there will not be a Foster's can because there's just not going to be enough room for the Foster's can. I'll use a roasting rack instead. It should work out nicely. I mean, the skin treatment and the hickory smoke level and the flame, that was all right on. It just spent too much time in the heat. So that was that. And less of a moron would have gone ahead and just gone and got a new probe thermometer, but I wanted to see if I could guesstimate, and rule one is never guesstimate on a turkey. The other thing is that I won't leave it on for the full time since I'm traveling with it. It's a traveling turkey, this next one. I'll just get it done part of the way, get it nice and smoky, and then Thursday morning I'll finish it in the oven over at our daughter's. No, Marty. not boiling the bird in a giant Foster's can? Are you anti-Aussie now? I don't think they make a can that big. If they would, I would have found it, and I would have had a straw. And Brother Deacon Asa reminds me that, yes, the fundraising goal may only be $175 tonight, but we all can help support the program by sending in for a 3-month supply of melancholy milk thistle this glorious Moran Monday. Yes, yes, that's right. Melancholy Milk Thistle from the hardworking pseudoscientists at Horn Labs. Melancholy Milk Thistle, well, milk thistle has amazing properties. Not the least of which are the fact that it's milk. It's a thistle. And we figured out a way to get it into a capsule for you. Oh, don't be fooled by milk thistle from Nature's Bounty or milk thistle from GNC or milk thistle from Walgreens or Cut Rate Pharmacy or CVS or Wally World. No. Not even Puritan's Pride milk thistle has the amazing properties of Melancholy Milk Thistle from Horn Labs. Because only Melancholy Milk Thistle from Horn Labs in its proprietary blend can support your liver, kidney, and gallbladder health. Because it's got an extra heaping special dose of Silmarillion. Because it's just really awesome milk thistle that's gluten-free and vegan and non-GMO. And it's free-range milk thistle. Melancholy Milk Thistle, only from Horn Labs. Remember, if you order that 3-month supply for $112, then, well, we'll send you a little bundle of meaningless test strips so that you can make sure for your own self that Melancholy Milk Thistle, only from Horn Labs, is a completely worthless bullshit nutritional supplement that we hustle over here at the Horn Labs, because you can't be a real radio program without a bullshit nutritional supplement to foist off on the folks who tune you in. Melancholy Milk Thistle, only from Horn Labs. I've never much personally cared for milk thistle, and the only way to this day that I can get my belly full of milk thistle goodness is by taking a handful of Melancholy Milk Thistle from Horn Labs. Accept no substitutes, post no bills, use no hooks, this side up, COD, FOB, MONEY, Melancholy Milk Thistle from Horn Labs. Better than chocolate paleo chicken bone malted Ichio beverage any old day. Melancholy Milk Thistle. Yeah, only from Horn Labs. You'll be glad you did. So, like I said, it really is more in Monday, and well, we got a lot to work with. I could have gone on the air at like noon on Saturday. No, really. Mm-hmm.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Step right up. You will not believe your ears. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. That's right, that's right. Mere steps away from the Carnival Midway, we've got them all for you here behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas. Birchers, Deathers, Ninthers, Tenthers, Booger Eaters, Trumpanzees. Haven't done this in a while. That's right, Morans of every right-wing stripe and variety.
right here on Moran Monday on the Horn. The maggots are in attendance. Inside the tent, friends and neighbors, brothers and sisters, kiddies and cousins, you can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Yes, 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 for only 16 cents per hour of programming for the average $10 a month subscriber, it's all here. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. When you step in, well, they're all right there waiting for you, friends and neighbors. And it costs you less than you spent over there throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls trying to win a little iguana that will probably give you some sort of loathsome disease when you get it home. But as you come through the Moran Monday gateway, just remember, keep a hand on children, purses, wallets, backpacks, iguanas, and even European-style messenger bags, because the Morans can get grabby. Yep, head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans, for it's Moran Monday on the Horn. Yes, yes indeed. Lots of places, lots of alternatives for this Moran Monday. Oh my goodness gracious, yes. Where to begin, where to begin? How about Danica Rome? Danica Rome was really, really classy when she beat a nasty creature by the name of Bob Marshall from Manassas, Virginia. He proudly billed himself as the biggest homophobic bigot in the Commonwealth of Virginia's legislature. And Danica Rome is a transgendered person who ran for the office because of how loathsome Bob Marshall was and is, and beat him, and then behaved with extreme class, saying she wouldn't trash him because he was now one of her constituents and she wasn't in the business of you know, trashing constituents. it apparently was not a two-way street. So lo and behold, not content to simply ride off into the sunset, Bob Marshall fired a Parthian shot, or tried to. Fact of the matter is, what he did was he fire off a letter to the editor of the Washington Post. Here's the Moran part. The Washington Post decided to print it. It's just a bitter screed from a bitter old man. But somebody there in the letters department at the Washington Post said, "Oh, hey, we don't have anything better to print today. Let's run Bob Marshall's letter." Here's Bob Marshall's letter. This is all courtesy, by the way, of Haley in Arkansas. Thank you, Haley. "If you think insurance premiums are high now, just wait until Virginia Delegate-elect Danica Rome's legislation to force insurance companies to cover sex change operations takes effect." And cites a news story called "Rome to Push for transgender health care. Well, Ms. Rome, paren D, paren, also covers sex change reversals to treat the growing incidence of sex change regret by persons who find the cure worse than the disease. Now that he's no longer an elected member of the Virginia legislature, I suppose there's no need to look into Bob Marshall's past and find out how many women he's groped or butts he's slapped or tweaked or pinched or how many times he's answered the door naked with his in his hand. No. We'll just, because, you know, he's a has-been now. He's washed up. Too bad the Post did not write this article before the election to fully inform voters about Ms. Rome's real agenda. I wonder when Governor-elect Ralph Northam will open up our highway rest stops and state office building locker rooms and bathrooms to people who think they are the opposite sex, just as they are trying to do in our public schools. Virginians must wake up, not be intimidated, and fight this radical transgender agenda for the sake of our cheering and grandchildren. Bob Marshall, man asses. Yeah, all righty then. Bob Marshall, hateful moron, and Washington Post moron for, you know, publishing it. No, in point of fact, the Washington Post says, we select letters based on their newsworthiness, and the words of an elected official are important. Whether or not we agree on the writer's point of view has no bearing on our decision to publish their letter. That's Christine Corradi Kelly, Vice President of Communications and Events, in a statement to LGBTQ Nation. We include, I'm sorry, I'm giving her the Thurston Howell, I hope this isn't abusive conduct, I'm giving her the Thurston Howell voice. We include links and letters that provide context on the subject being addressed. Jesus. Like I said, I guess they didn't have a chemtrails letter that could have just as easily filled that space. But this is an extension of the ever-popular the trans critters are going to rape our daughters in the potty argument, coupled with the idea that our country's going to go broke turning penises inside out. Do you understand how expensive it is to turn a penis inside out? And make a woe man out of a man. Yeah, they didn't do that in the Bible. Of course, they died of simple infections in the Bible and attributed that to the wrath of God too. But oh well. Right. Earthers right there on it. To be fair, we all know gender assignment surgery, reassignment surgery, or as it is now referred to, gender confirmation surgery, is the largest item in the healthcare budget. Not serious here. I've come to be able to pretty quickly translate your snark on the fly, Arthur. You're doing fine. So that's where we begin. And that's a pretty, wouldn't you say, that's a pretty goofy, loopy sort of conspiracy theory. But you really ain't seen nothing or heard nothing yet. Because, I can't even give this, I can't fully comprehend it because it is layered in so many multiple onion skins of loony
But remember, remember Comet Ping Pong Pizzagate? The massive right-wing freakout that those transparency advocates over at WikiLeaks helped share around. Gosh, Julian, thanks for nothing, buddy. Well, there you go. It's back. The workers at Comet Ping Pong Pizza in D.C. were tormented, harassed, harangued, and it was promoted as a genuine, bona fide child sex ring being run by the Democrats out of the basement of a building that doesn't have a basement. And that's what they want you to think, at least. It's hidden behind a an interdimensional force field. That you're right, yeah. Well, it's back, sort of. You remember, and what I thought was most telling about this, and I didn't really make much mention of it during the program last week, when Dolt 45 desperately reached over to pick up a bottle of Fiji water, America first, y'all, and chugged it down during his press conference. One of the neat things is that it shows how tiny, I mean, everybody knows that that's, scale is everything. That's why, you know, if you don't have anything, you put a penny next to something small that you're taking a picture of so that you can get an idea of scale, the size of the object that you're photographing, that sort of thing. Well, we don't often get scale on things like Marcus Aurelius's hands, but there it was. He picked up that bottle of, and they're tiny. Little bitty bottle of Fiji water, and he had to two-hand it. That's how tiny. So, apparently, and I mean, I just can't. I will not go over there, and I cannot comprehend. But over at those websites where the where the maggots congregate, they've decided this was a signal. It was a secret high sign. Donald Trump is about to drop the hammer o' justice. Well, I think there's a hammer of justice might be getting ready to drop, but it's going to drop on him, not by him. Now, Donald Trump is getting ready to drop the big hammer o' justice on a worldwide... a worldwide sex trafficking ring, white slavers, that amounts to Pizzagate on steroids. I can't, but it's you can see it. They're calling it Follow the White Rabbit. Huh. This now centers on boots for hurt feet. Because there are pictures of... And you know what I'm talking about? The support boots you wear when you screwed up your ankle or your foot or whatever. Well, there are pictures of Hillary Clinton, John McCain, and Chelsea Clinton at various times wearing one of these boots on their feet. I'd imagine there are probably tens of thousands of Americans who've worn these boots on their feet. But no. The maggots have decided that this is an indication that they have all been fitted for their ankle bracelets for their home monitoring devices while they're on house arrest because child prostitution, sex trafficking ring. Yeah. Who's in the middle of this? Well, of course.
Alex Jones.
Oh, well. The stupid is strong. It is very, very strong indeed. But remember, Danica Rome has a transgender bathroom insurance agenda. Transgender agenda. And that makes it easy, doesn't it? There's so much of this stuff. I had no idea, Randy. Randy in PA says, during the network coverage of the entire Vietnam War, there was never any scale shown on any of the maps. It turns out that if you look upon the globe of the Earth, the entirety of Indochina is actually the size of the state of Texas. I didn't know. Did not know. And it's that time of year again. Although there are already radio stations playing nonstop Christmas music, and although there have been intimations of the Christmas shopping season, and although retail stores started putting up Christmas stuff before the Halloween stuff was even all the way down, we get into the real serious capitalist business of Christmas this week. And that means that, it being the holidays and all, various capitalist enterprises are putting out their holiday disposable coffee cups. Starbucks in particular. And because this is why they exist, the folks over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda have issued the War on Christmas warning about the Starbucks cup. The cups feature a busy print of holiday favorites like mittens, presents, and Christmas trees. And above the logo, two unseen people are holding hands. Well, if they're unseen, how do we know they're holding hands? That's because there are two drawn, line-drawing hands clasped. One is wearing has a red and white striped arm, which I suppose is meant to indicate that it's a sweater. And they're not burly hands or holding footballs or catcher's mitts or anything, or drills or firearms. So that means that they're womanly hands. Yes. Is the sense of dread and horror building in you yet? That's right. That's right. The maggots, the Republicans, the conservatives are up in arms because, as they wrote over at The Blaze, people are theorizing that the holiday design for Starbucks cups contain a hidden pro-gay message, and their official Twitter account appeared to confirm it. Those hands. It's a white cup. The Starbucks label is there. It looks kind of like, maybe, for a minute there I thought, well, son of a bitch, that was edgy. Starbucks done hired Ralph Steadman to do the cup. No, it's not, because there's nothing like shrieking or screaming or, you know, emitting flute. No. White cup, line drawings, a lot of red. It's basically three colors, black, red, and green. But they're descending from the lip of the cup with a sort of non-symmetrical heart in between them. Two people holding hands. One arm. It's not even. It's just arms. Really, there's not even an elbow. One arm is indicated as having a cuff, like a stretch cuff. at the end, like on a sweater. And the other is wearing a shorter sweater that has red and white striping in it and a couple of lines across the arm that would probably be like bracelets. And everybody's, the maggots, the weirdos, the mouth breathers and the knuckle walkers have decided that them there is lesbian Christmas arms is what they are. Oh, yeah. And it's making it's driving the maggots to quote the Bible, Rom 1:26. Because of this, God gave them over to shameful lust, because that's what that is all over that shameful lust on that Starbucks cup. On the other hand, as our buddy Tony pointed out to me on Facebook today, while the good God fearing upstanding Bible believing Christ centered evangelical fundamentalist amosexuals. Christians are getting themselves they're getting their maiden forms all in a bunch over the Starbucks cup, because see, that's what the Illuminati have conditioned them to do. That they think that the primary signal is coming out from Starbucks for the gay agenda every year, and who knows, even the transgender agenda. Well, those sneaky Illuminati out there in their Bohemian Grove. Mm-hmm. They work the real message in on the McDonald's cup. Sure, look at it. Yeah, those are mittens. Sure they are. Look again. Imagine some tiny fingers where the mittens are. Then you'll figure it out. That's right. McDonald's is mooning its customer base with its holiday coffee cup, because the mittens look just like a portion of a human torso sort of bent over to display the buttocks. But they're mittens if you don't have a filthy mind. 6:47 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The wheels on the trolley are beginning to wobble a bit, and we are perilously close to going into the gutter. Now, what happened was some really brilliant and filthy-minded person. Yay, them. Noticed the McDonald's cup, and with what I presume to be a fine point pen, it drew some little fingers, and there it was. Warmest greetings, it says across the buttocks, and underneath, McCafe. Whoever put the photo up initially said, I stared at it for hours, like, how is it not someone holding their ass open? And I finally realized it's supposed to be mittens. It is the funniest image I've seen in a very long time. When I first got the notification, I don't think we've ever had a Facebook cowbell. That's to Tony for bringing it to my attention. Holy God, that was funny. You can see it over on my timeline if you go over to Facebook, Bob Kincaid. Scott and Punky with a communique. Maybe it's a secret Black Power Negro Revolutionary Nation signal message. Because it's black and red and green. course it is. And, yeah, I know, it's very simple of me to point it out, but it's Morin Monday, and he deserves a mention with every, you know, every Morin Monday. Comrade Kumquat got all upset at Marshawn Lynch this weekend because they played a National Football League football contest in Mexico, and Marshawn Lynch didn't kneel for the Mexican national anthem, but he knelt for the United States national anthem. This then drove the spirochetes inside of Donald Trump's head into paroxysms of unimaginable fury. Jesus. He's also mad at LeVar Ball. Is that the guy's name? Father of three very, very talented young basketball players, one of whom was being kept in house arrest in a nice hotel in China because it was, the Chinese authorities were pretty sure that he and his compadres had done some shoplifting in China. And the UCLA athletic director was somehow or another powerless. Yeah, Tiny decided that Daddy was not sufficiently obsequious and didn't call him Massa or anything, and so consequently, he tried to start a Twitter war with him. Because, you know, the world's so goddamn quiet. Nothing really going on. He's just bored out of his mind being president, because, well, what is there to do? Except tweet. Jesus God. So, it then turns out, through a post from BuzzFeed News, that it's quite possible, you can decide whether you believe it or not, BuzzFeed News reporting today that the National Security Advisor, H.R. McMaster, who took a meeting at a private dinner with one of the most influential and powerful CEOs in the tech industry, the Oracle CEO, Safra Katz. And Safra Katz, according to BuzzFeed, has been mentioned as a possible appointee for a number of administration jobs. But back in July, having dinner, remember, this is before Charlottesville or anything like that. Back in July, at a dinner with Katz, H.R. McMaster described, I mean, it's almost like he'd been having a conversation with Kim Jong-un or something. He called him everything but a dotard. He called him an idiot, a dope, and said that Donald Trump has the intelligence of a kindergartner. And that was not the first time that McMaster had made such observations, and if he made them, they're accurate because, well, he is adult. He's dotard. Meanwhile, there occurred a flurry of denials. One source told BuzzFeed News, Katz said the conversation was so inappropriate that it was jaw-dropping. Now, what does this mean? Well, I'm right powerful fond of Talking Points Memo. And Josh Marshall, looking at this story, couldn't help noting that H.R. McMaster waged a small war to get the Bannon wing out of the White House. McMaster also said, that's true. Marty says, McMaster owes kindergartners an apology. Yes, I agree. McMaster also said that Jared Kushner has no business being involved in national security issues at all. Here's the fun part. Before they could get rid of him, Turkish operative and pal of Russian oligarchs Mike Flynn brought in a bunch of his own people. And it took H.R. McMaster a very long time to get rid of all of them. And one of the last ones, according to Josh Marshall, one of the last ones he managed to get rid of, one of the most tenacious hangers-on, was a cat by the name of Ezra Cohen Watnick. This would be, as Josh Marshall reports, the guy who was involved with Devin Nunes in the really bizarre leak of information from the White House at the White House. You remember? And it was early August when McMaster finally was able to sack Cohen Watnick. Here, as Josh Marshall points out, is where it gets interesting. You know, none of these vicious pricks ever fall on hard times when they leave the administration. Ezra Cohen Watnick wound up at the lobbying office in Washington, D.C. of, drumroll please, Oracle. So it's rat fuck and counter rat fuck. Josh Marshall writes, to be clear, this doesn't mean the report is not true. I suspect something like it is true. It may be verbatim true. Who knows? But you will not convince me that Cohen Watnick's now working in a high-level position in Oracle's D.C. office is not directly related to this story coming about. Indeed, I'm surprised the Cohen Watnick feud and his current employment at Oracle did not come up in the BuzzFeed article. Idiot. Oh, wait a minute. We're going to have to go back to the color scheme on the Starbucks cup. By the way, black, red, and green are also the colors of that there Sharia law Muslim flag. See, Starbucks is subconsciously pushing Sharia law on the good upstanding Christians. Thank you. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. I told you it was going to be a busy Moran Monday. That note coming in from Robert in Australia. So, people in the U.S. are concerned over coffee cups? Isn't Puerto Rico still a disaster zone? Well, yes, it is. But, of course, they're not real Americans, and most of them are moving to Orlando anyway. I done read about it in the news over the weekend. No, Puerto Rico is still a disaster. They briefly got to 50% electricity generation for the entire island, and then it all fell apart over the weekend. Lasted about 2 hours. And they've got some water, but anybody who gets it has to boil it. There's a boil water advisory, because that's shot to hell too. Meanwhile, $44 billion were appropriated for hurricane relief, but it has to be shared among Florida, Texas, and Puerto Rico. Guess who doesn't have any voting members of the Senate or the House? Ha? Puerto Rico. Guess who's going to take it on the chin? Puerto Rico. So you see just how busy we really are. No, it's that software Katz. Randy said, I thought that Oracle CEO was Ellison. Apparently not now, or wasn't then. That's all we can say. It wasn't then. Yes, Marty, yes, absolutely. Finally, says Marty, my first cowbell. And the White Rose Society stream has apparently dropped. Yep. It dropped for Randy, too. Sorry, y'all. I don't know what's going on. But headon.live is still up and running. All right, so... I thought Creedence Clearwater Revival was on that, fixing the Puerto Rico electric grid. No, and Whitefish Energy done got canned, so there's that, too. So that's the filibobster. That's Moran Monday in a nutshell, although there are other Morans. In my father's house are many Morans. You know what it says in the book there. And we'll get to them. It depends on which ones you want to talk about. Because this is, after all, a call-in program. This is conversation radio, where no one is hurried, no one gets hustled off the air, no one gets told to hold while we get through a break. There's no, that's enough about you, let's talk about me. That's what conversation radio means. But it only means that if you call the program. The way you call the program, area code 304-574-8178. Or, from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn, and everything generally works quite well with both systems, so jump right in if you wish. Yes, TGF Asa, says Marty. Ask him if he thinks he might like Bellhaven's Scottish Ale. There we go. Robert's saying, taxation without representation. Didn't the USA have a bust-up a while back about taxation without representation? Yeah. But that doesn't count if the language spoken is, you know, not Merck and big AAA, so as we all can understand. They speak Mexican down in Puerto Rico, you know. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, break and then your conversation if you wish to engage. This is listener-supported conversation radio. Started out the program with only $175 to raise, and we've got only $175 to raise in the next hour and 57 minutes. I'm Bob Kincaid. I'll be right back.
It's 12 o'clock.
Okay, so Havana Moon, not San Juan Moon, but still a little Caribbean feel for the almost the beginning of the third full week of November. You saw my intent with that, right?
Sure.
By the way, Asa says, I've had that Bellhaven's ale. Good hooch. I have not, nor will I. But still, that's... Yeah. So, in keeping with talking about Puerto Rico for a minute, because, yeah, I know, there's all kinds of people groping and grabbing and skeeving and sleazing and sliming and sloppy wet tongue kissing and wet willying and drinking and being nasty all over the country. I know that. And there will be time. There will be time to discuss each and every bit of it. Oh, yeah, by the way, got a note, Pioneer throttles your connection. No, my connection isn't throttled. Frontier just sucks. That's all. They just suck. They can't deliver much, and what they do try to deliver, they don't deliver what they bill you for. And a bunch of the time, they go down and fail. They're not throttling my connection. The connection goes up to the servers just fine. Whatever's happening, because I'm not serving the program out from here. I could not, if I could afford it, like 28 up, 28 down is a bare minimum. If I could afford that, there's hardly anybody in West Virginia that could deliver it to me. So just to be clear, no, my throttle is, my connection is not throttled. It's not a thing. The thing is, massive technical problems and massive daily attacks at White Rose. I mean, we'd probably be off the air if I had to purchase a server and figure out a way to pay every month for that kind of bandwidth. We couldn't survive. This program would not be on the air. I would like to do that, but I also recognize the world in which we live. Just staying with Puerto Rico for a moment. Do you remember? I'm sure you do. When the Marmalade Mugabe said that at least Puerto Rico wasn't a real disaster like Katrina, with really great, magnificent, tremendous, best numbers of dead people. Well, CNN went down to Puerto Rico and started doing some actual, real, live, no kidding, honest-to-goodness journalism. The headline says, we surveyed 112 Puerto Rican funeral homes to check the accuracy of the hurricane death toll. Here's what we found. What they found is that of the official toll of 55 dead after Hurricane Maria, that the number likely is far, far worse. Based on their statistical analysis and their surveys, CNN suggests that the death toll from Hurricane Maria may be nine times higher than the official number. Let's see, almost 500 people. But by all means, let's talk about grab-assing by Al Franken. Yes. Or maybe we can go and read together an article over at Slate screaming, Al Franken must resign, or else progressives have no real, No, let's go and talk to Rich. Hey, Rich.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
What were you going to say?
How are you?
You cracked me up when you read that letter from that loser about Danica Rome in Virginia winning his seat. I mean, talk about lack of grace and unmanliness and just stupidity.
I think he's in the hands of the goddess of irony when you think about what often happens at rest area restrooms. The idea that that's where he went in his letter to the editor. I have a feeling that's where he also goes, you know, when he's feeling a little randy out there in manasses.
You know, I have long suspected that most conservative yahoos like him either latently or secretly want to indulge in the pleasures of the flesh with their fellow men. And I guess there's probably a good reason to believe that after you listen to this kind of garbage coming out of the mouth of losers like this.
Well, look, I don't care who has sex with whom.
Yeah, I don't either.
The only time, Rich, that I feel like we've got a dog in the hunt is when there are questions of unequal power dynamics, harassment, lack of consent, and of course, good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist hypocrisy.
Exactly. It's just, well, I can't even say that it surprises or shocks me anymore. I mean, this has been going on since I can remember. Since I can remember the priests when I was growing up going to Catholic school, I always felt they were a little more affectionate with the boys than the girls. Maybe it was just a priest that I had, but I always felt that. I mean, I don't know. It's just, there's no end to it. It's like, I'm not shocked. I'm just disgusted. I learned about grace when I was in Catholic school as a child growing up. And I don't see any grace coming from any conservative anymore. There was a time when I did see grace coming from a conservative, but I don't see it anymore. The only thing they're concerned with is power and money, it seems to me. They have no other agenda but power and money. And that's why we got the president we got. You know, I mean, he has no other qualifications the money may be in doubt. I don't think he's got as much money as they say he does, because that's why, I think that's the real reason why a lot of his tax returns get out, because he needs to hang on to that billionaire mentality, aura. And I don't think he is a billionaire anymore. As far as power goes, he's always been in that position of punching down. He's always been the kind of bully. He's always been a bully. He's always been somebody that punches down. And that's all I see in any of them anymore.
Rich, come on. It's no fun. Fair fights are no fun.
Right. You're right.
Yeah, because you might lose.
Unless you're somebody who really believes in the American way. And I think the only ones that really believe in the American way anymore are what we call liberals.
Well, just remember, Rich, just remember, the national symbol of our country is a bird that never fights anything its own size and prefers to pick flesh off of dead stuff.
Right. Okay. Exactly. Although I think it's actually, a bit of corruption of that as a symbol. Because I think the eagle has a majestic quality about it, you know? I mean, really.
Oh, they are. They're magnificent. They're beautiful.
Yeah. And I mean, they're really emblematic of the balance of nature. You know, to me, I mean, I think, the Romans and then the Nazis and then now the American Empire have taken that noble symbol and like you said, corrupted it,
Well, remember the double eagle symbol of Russia is a direct carryover from the double eagle of the Byzantine Empire, which of course
all
was,
right.
which was of
sense.
Course an extension of the Roman Empire. But
right.
There's that.
Well, it was the Eastern Roman Empire. Yeah, after the split in the 3rd century AD.
And the Mexican flag has an eagle on it, holding a snake in its beak.
Right. And what does that one symbolize?
That is supposedly from a Mexica. It's from Mexica mythology that said that the Mexica people would found their capital city of Tenochtitlan in a place where they saw an eagle sitting on a cactus with a snake in its beak.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
But it's Thanksgiving week, so I think it's only appropriate that we remind everybody that Ben Franklin wanted the wild turkey to be the national symbol of the new
country. That's right. Thank you for reminding me that. I forgot all about that, but you're right. You're right. And so what do we do with the turkey in Franklin's honor? We devour it.
Well, because they're tasty.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, if that would have been the noble national symbol as Franklin wanted it to, we wouldn't be devouring them, would we?
Oh, I think we would.
Anyway, right? Well, is that because we're like in Empire stage of self-destruction now? So
we just don't care. If our national symbol was a trout, we'd still eat trout.
So in other words, we've always been about self-immolation and self-destruction.
Or not particularly overly concerned with the emotional quality of symbology. Personally, I think the official flag of the Trump administration should be a goddamn catfish, Rich, because they're bottom feeders.
Well, that's right. All right, but fortunately, each administration does get to pick its own national symbol. But that would definitely suit him. That would definitely suit his character right there. I like the new name he gave him tonight. I'm going to remember that. Share with my conservative friends who can take a joke. There's a few of them that can take a joke. Dolt 45. I like that. Dolt 45. And Marcus Aurelius, you said?
Yeah, Marcus Aurelius. Horelius. Horelius.
Right. Horelius. Right. Because he is definitely a whore. There's no question. I mean, I'd be ashamed to have that much power as he has and have that little self-knowledge. I mean, these are empty vessels, these people. Their souls are not intact. Their souls are buried under so much garbage. I alternate between feeling pity for them and seeking their destruction. It may sound very twisted on my part, but that's how I feel about them right now. Because, you know, I grew up in the 50s, Bob, and in the 50s, what I remember in the 50s is that people, everybody, pretty much got along. And you knew your neighbors for blocks and blocks away, and nobody felt like they had to lock their houses, and nobody felt like they had to own a gun to protect themselves, you know? And I don't know what the hell is going on here. What have we become as a nation? Paranoid, small-minded, not open to any kind of input to expand our horizons or increase our sense of self to become, you know, the highest we can become as human beings in terms of conscious awareness. We've, like, as a nation, we've decided to look at our navel and go below our navel inside our guts and get stuck in the treacle down there. You know, it's like we're turning inside out.
Wait a minute. I guarantee, yeah. Richard, I guarantee that no matter, there's a lot of talk programs out there. There's a lot of radio programs out there.
Yeah.
I guarantee that no one, nowhere, except the horn, has the word treacle been used in American broadcasting today. So you get a cowbell. That's a treacle cowbell.
Thank you very
I was
going
to say that, you're suggesting that a certain percentage of the American population have self-cloacolated.
Exactly. I mean, they've gone beyond self-coagulated. They are now in advanced deterioration or dissipation phase. You know, the quantum mechanics of their consciousness are breaking down into smaller and smaller particles of no-thingness, or not knowing anything, knowing anything. It's like we are starting to really get down to the destruction of the language, that Orwell talked about in 1984, and the guttural inversion of consciousness into a smaller, smaller set of, things where we're at the dear leader stage. We're definitely at the dear leader stage. He whines about somebody not liking him and says, your favorite president has been insulted. I mean, come on, man. Can you imagine Lincoln or Washington or Jefferson or any of those great men of our former past?
Historically speaking, Richard, George Washington was known for being particularly prickly. When he set up as the first president, he insisted he did not wish to be a monarch, but he then went about the business of president in such a way that everybody understood that he was one.
See, that's one of the big reasons why I like talking. By the way, I can't get into your chat room. How do you get into the chat room? I can't get in there.
You're going to need the cooperation of Java.
Yeah, I got Java.
It's Java-based. Apart from that, I mean, some people get in, some people don't get in.
So I'm not the only one that has this problem, is what you're telling me.
No, you're not the only one.
I'm glad I got Skype.
People with Apple machines have a devil of a time getting in. There, you can. You just have to probably devote more time to it than most people think it's worth.
Right. Okay. Well, that's good to know. It's good to know that I'm not the one having that problem. So.
We don't have a Rich from Jersey ban on the chat room. I promise.
No, I know you don't, Bob. I know you don't. And by the way, just so you know, I really appreciate you asking about how I'm feeling. I'm getting better. I am getting better. It's a slow but sure, but it's happening. And the horn radio being there to help me maintain part of my sanity is a big help because, boy, I'll tell you. Otherwise, I listen to MSNBC and I go nuts.
Well, I guess that's still pretty tall company to be in. I mean, if it's us or NBC, MSNBC, by God, I got one guy in Jersey who says the horn fucking wins, and I'm proud of that.
Yeah, I do think you win because at least, you take the sting and put a little laughter into the insanity. I mean, the ones that are pretty good straight up, and you get a chuckle sometimes, or Matto and O'Donnell. They'll be a little sarcastic and, snarky. The rest of them are pretty straight reporting. Okay, and of course, I never expect you to do any straight reporting. That would be absurd, because that's not your mission. Your mission is to inform and entertain and help sharpen our consciousness about stuff.
That's as close to a definition of what I try to do as I think anybody's ever fully enunciated. I mean, I've done reporting. I mean, it's one of the things that I started out, journalism.
Yeah.
And, it's, I did radio news anchoring. This is the news. I've done it. And now this. But it's not near as much fun as this is.
Yeah, and praise be 12 years, I got to tell you, that, to me, that's amazing. You've been doing this for 12 years now. I've been a horn listener maybe for since 2012. So about less than half the time you've been on the air. But boy, I'll tell you, it took me out of it. I have suffered from major depression for years, and listening has been one of the few things that, that first hour before I talk to you, especially that first half hour, I almost split a gut, man. You know, I mean, you just – you talk about these people like – I don't even know how to define how you talk about them. It's just like – it's like you put them under a microscope so thoroughly. You know, and I like that. I like that about you. The way you drill down, you know, like MSNBC always talks about drilling down, drilling down, drilling down. But they always get to a spot where they feel very uncomfortable drilling down any further, except for Maddow and O'Donnell.
Well, I mean, there are places it gets there are places it gets uncomfortable to go to.
Yes.
And if you're doing stuff where if you're working in a medium where. You know, if somebody inadvertently says booger live on your air, you know, you're facing a monumental fine. It's tough to get just really, really comfortable with all of it. And there are things, Rich, there are things, there are things that I think about that I'm getting, and I'm not being a smartass about this. I'm getting overwhelmed with the sex abuse allegations.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That is
not because I minimize it.
Right.
I don't minimize it.
Right.
I'm just wondering, well, it's forced a lot of us. It's everybody, but the right wing man, it's forced us to turn inward and look at our own behaviors and see if we've done anything sketchy in the past. For the most part,
right.
I've come to the conclusion that I was so scared of being slapped and my fragile male ego was so terrified of rejection that I just didn't do it. And maybe and if that's the only reason why, that's not, you know, that doesn't speak very well of me.
Right.
I'd like to think that I had better raisin than that. But I've also never had $1 million and had it just flowing out, but millions of dollars just, you know, falling out of my pockets and felt like that empowered me to do things to other people.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, not everybody that's accused of doing that has that.
I don't think anybody at MSNBC has that. I think you got to go to Fox for that, or CNN for some. But I don't think anybody at MSNBC is getting handed a $1 million check. On a regular basis,
I don't think if you're an on air host, you're not eating beans, okay?
No, they're all making a decent.
Not that there's anything wrong with beans. But
the ones you're talking about, the ones you do your heart are the ones on Fox or, you know, Hannity or you got, you know, independently EIB with the fat man, you know, those are the ones that are crapping dollar bills and silver certificates, you know, not mostly anybody on CNN or MSNBC, Fox and the independent sleazeballs, Levine, all of them. I think most of them, they're the ones that you're talking about. I think they have the big paydays and the lousy.
Well, I mean, you know, and I don't know what makes, I don't know why people. It's not necessarily an our side kind of thing. You know, the latest one coming to air this evening was Charlie Rose.
Right. I never thought of him as being right or left. I always thought he played right down the middle.
I always thought of him as being just unbearably dull, if you want the truth.
Oh, yeah, well, I...
Can't watch him. Okay, I can. On those nights when I absolutely can't sleep, if I absolutely can't sleep, I can turn on Charlie Rose and I'm gone in 2 minutes. But
so there you go. It's a good sleeping pill for you. Wow, that's valuable.
You know, that's just me. But I mean, I think about things, Rich. You know, try it. You know, I think it's like a Rubik's cube. You know, you can look at it and it's just a square face facing you. But if you rotate it, there's all kinds of angles and I'm just thinking in terms of human evolution. And all of these 50 somethings and 60 somethings who are out there grab assing and you know, whether it's Trump or Roger Ailes or Harvey Weinstein, on and on and on and on.
Right.
it seems like there's a disproportionate number of them. Of course, it's not Roy Moore. Roy Moore was 32. But there's a disproportionate number of them that are, you know, 50 and up.
That's true.
And so I was thinking earlier today why it is that evolution decided to give human females menopause, and despite all the touchy-feely magazines saying, oh, well, you know, this is like male menopause. No, it didn't. No. Right. If what I've heard is true, Ben Franklin, whom we mentioned a little bit ago, fathered a bastard child in his 80s.
Yeah.
Okay. Why do men get to do that and women don't? I suspect it's because of the stress on the system of actually carrying the child to term. Menopause is meant to be a break. You know, they can't make you do this anymore.
Right.
But the thing is,
makes a lot of sense, Bob.
It's a combination of money and power and testosterone.
Yeah.
And I just looked up this morning and watching the news, and son of a bitch, you know, there it is. Al Franken groped me at the Minnesota State Fair, says a woman from Texas. Woman from Texas. How about that? And I just went, God damn. And so scientifically, testosterone, if I understand what I've read correctly, testosterone is rough on your heart when you become an older man.
Right.
Testosterone, if the bullshit nutritional supplement ads I hear are true, a chemical variant on that called dihydrotestosterone is why men's hair falls out.
Okay.
So maybe there should be like not a biological menopause for men, but like at age 50, all the guys go and just get some taken off. And then you won't have any more skeevy 50 plus year olds. And I'll say, yeah, you're a young thing. Because see, and I'm going to piss people off, and I don't mean to. 50-year-old guys, I mean, if you want to talk about that psychologically conceptual male menopause, that's your 50-year-old guy. Because he still wants to feel. That's why they invented fucking Viagra, Rich.
Right.
Because he still wants to. He wants to walk around. Really? I could get an 8-hour boner. I'm not going to the hospital. I'm going to Vegas. and guys want that. They want it. And there's somewhere along the way we've lost. If you go and read Plato's Republic. Fairly early on, there's a discussion between Socrates, and some other old dude who says, you know, I'm not chasing women anymore. I am so glad I am free of that madness because it made me crazy. All I could ever think about was having sex. Not in exactly those terms because they. You know, Plato didn't write that way, but he's saying that there is a relief that comes from no longer having to behave like some sort of alpha male lion in the pack.
Right.
And you know, maybe that's the evolutionary reason men do continue to be reproductively capable up into their advanced years is you never know when all the other males are going to get killed. And then the 80-year-old's just going to have, or you never know when God's going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, and Lot's daughters are going to need somebody, anybody, Uncle Daddy.
That's right, Uncle Daddy. Step on up, Uncle Daddy, with your huge supply of testosterone at the age of 80, and repopulate the planet for us.
So, you know, maybe that's, maybe, I don't know. I mean, and I'm not, this isn't anything kinky or weird or maybe.
No, but I can see what I would pick. You would be pissing a lot of. I mean, I'm 66. Doesn't piss me off like you said. And I kind of like I think I've reached that point that you were just talking about that Plato described of, you know, relieve me of the magnet so I can think clearly now. I feel that way. I've been by and large relieved of the madness, and I do try to think more clearly about things and life and trying to enjoy life without being driven by that primal urge that destroys men, you know, in their later years, or makes them like crazy, like you're just saying, like Roy Moore, you know, that's what it's doing to him. He won't admit, but I'm thinking he still probably wants to chase around the 14-year-old. And he's deep in madness. He's deep in that testosterone madness that you're talking about.
And Donald, you know, look at Trump. How many cases?
I don't think he gets enough with Melania though. I think he's shot.
I think he is now. You know, that water chugging, the first thing I thought of the other day when I saw him chugging that water with these tiny little hands, the first thing I thought is, that fucker's got diabetes.
Yeah, well, I got diabetes. I know about that.
You know how thirsty you get.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Because I don't think he'd just come in from, running 4 miles, doing laps around the White House grounds.
No, you can't live on a diet of Big Macs and fries and Coke like he does and not have diabetes at the age of 71.
Well, what was that book a few years ago, Morgan Spurlock, where he ate a McDonald's diet for 30 days?
And it
just about destroyed his body?
I remember watching the video of that, but I can't remember the name of it.
Supersize Me.
That's the one. You're right. Yeah. What did he gain? He gained like 60 pounds in those 30 days?
Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah.
Bill Clinton, the king of the Big Mac, is there, and he's no sooner out of the White House than it's time for him to get his chest cracked, and now he's a vegan.
Right, and he looks great now. Yep, he paid a heavy price, but now he looks great. He's a vegan, like you said. He got his chest cracked, and he learned his lesson. I lost a lot after I had my cancer, the surgeries and the chemo. I lost 75 pounds and I stayed around between 170 and 175. I'm 5'7". I could probably stand to lose 10 or 15 more, but I've gotten a lot cleaner with my diet. You know, I don't eat a lot of fast food. I used to eat a lot of fast food, drink a lot, smoke a lot of reefer, you know, and then I got sick. I can't do it. I don't care that it's good in California now. It's too late for me. I don't smoke the reefer anymore. I don't do drugs within my medication I get from my doctor, and I try to like get off of that as much as possible. I take very little diabetes medication now, and a lot of it is diet related. I try to explain that to the doctor. And my doctor's a good man, thank God. I love him. But you know, like most doctors, diet doesn't even enter in their equation of wellness. Now you have to do it on your own if you're gonna do it at all.
Well, in my case, you know, I went through all that business in February and March, and diet changed dramatically.
Yeah.
And I still do. My breakfast and my lunch are pretty much yogurt. And it's a little
good.
And I got off the metformin, and my blood sugar's behaving itself for the most part.
That's great, Joel.
But I still have to contend with, because I'm never not going to be hypoglycemic. And my blood sugar falls through the floor in a minute. So, you know, that kind of screws with stuff.
Do you take glucose tablets when you get that weight?
I've got a little package of them that go carry in my pocket. Yeah. I've got a package in my DOP kit. I've got a package in the car, and a couple of those little glucose shots too. And I try to keep some peanut butter and crackers and stuff around.
Yeah, that's good.
But it's a bitch. But you know, I've slowly been eating a little. Well, I mean, I'm not. It's not the full on yogurt and soup diet that I was on,
because
I was going to lose my freaking mind with that.
Yeah, that's true.
But you know, Thanksgiving's coming up, and Thursday's.
Oh boy.
Thursday's going to be brutal.
It's going to be. It'll be It'll be gouging day for you? Is gorging day? Gorge yourself good?
You know, I mean, I love that.
Try to moderate.
No, no. When I make the dressing, it's going to be a lost cause. Jesus, I love dressing.
And you're going to be paying for the 2 weeks after Thanksgiving is what you're telling me.
I hope not. I mean, I fill up a lot faster anymore.
A lot's good.
But, you know, God, that, you know, because for, you know, for, I can't just make a pan of dressing because everybody wants dressing for a fucking week. But, you know, it's onions and celery. If we're feeling particularly ritzy, we'll chop in some oysters and the oyster liquor and,
sausage?
Cornbread. No sausage.
Good.
But cornbread and biscuits and white bread. What I figured out, it took me a lot of years, but dressing is basically a savory bread pudding.
Right. That's you what know, it's supposed to be.
You know, you have, you know, your bread pudding, your sweet bread pudding, and you put the bourbon sauce over. Well, dressing is savory bread pudding, and the sauce is gravy.
Right.
And,
that's right.
And I won't even try to hold myself back on that. It's just, you know, I'll eat dressing 3 or 4 times, you know, and I'll just eat dressing for several days.
Phone dry. I've got to turn the phone off.
Oh, okay. I was looking around for mine. That was so close.
No, it's not yours. It's mine.
Please enter your remote access code.
Okay, goodbye. remote access code for you.
But you know, it's going to be very basic. You know, just really, really good mashed potatoes instead of butter. I'm going to
get double starch. Oh, no wonder you're going to die. Oh my God.
No, but I'm going to do a good thing. Instead of butter, I'm going to use unsweetened, unflavored, plain Greek yogurt.
All right, that's good. Yeah, your company won't even know the difference.
No, it'll be creamy and smooth and wonderful. The sweet potato croquettes are going to be a bitch. Because that's a marshmallow with sweet potatoes mashed with crushed pineapple wrapped around the marshmallow. And then you roll, roll the ball in melted butter, and then you roll that in crushed cornflakes, and you bake it.
Bob, are you going to end up in the emergency room Thursday night?
No. I'll nibble all along the way. So I probably won't even eat an entire plate of food.
Oh, it's good.
But it sounds like
you had any plate on that room on that plate for the bird to me.
And my deadly serious deviled eggs that take the idea of deviling seriously, they're not sweet. They don't have sweet pickle in them. They're mustardy and hot.
Oh, there you go.
And yummy. And you know, cranberry sauce. It's going to be real simple. No fancy green beans, almondine, or any of that groovy stuff. It's just an attempt to pull together a classic holiday family meal, especially because I think my grandkids need it right now.
Well, are you going to have salad at least?
You know, I was thinking
you got to have some green in there, Bob. I'm sorry.
You know, maybe. Hey, you know what? How about a?
Gotta have some fiber there, Bob.
How about a big pot of turnip greens?
That'll work. You gotta get some greens in there, Bob. I'm telling you, man.
You're probably right. I'm glad we're having this conversation. I might not have otherwise considered it.
I mean, you know, the only reason it strikes me so hard is in talking, and my mouth is watering where you're laying this out, is that I only got half a colon, man.
Oh, sorry, man.
No, so that's why I definitely got to have green, you know, at least a salad or something with any meal I eat. You know, I got to have something to push it through, you know?
Yes. Yeah, scrubbing bubbles, right?
Exactly. And I'm big on probiotics like you are. You know, like, I don't like to use yogurt as much as I use kefir. I don't know if you're familiar.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, I use that for my prebiotics and probiotics, but...
Well, you know what hillbillies use?
What did you use?
Buttermilk.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And I'm still hillbilly enough that when I'm sitting there making those pans of cornbread, I will have a tall cold glass of buttermilk with about a half a ton of black pepper sprinkled in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. No,
I'll get those probiotics cooking down, and you've got.
Oh, now see, you're giving me ideas. I just thought, wait a minute. I wonder how buttermilk with ground Szechuan peppercorn in it is. I'm in this Szechuan.
You're probably the only one in the family who can drink that.
Oh.
Does Agnes like it?
She'll drink buttermilk. I don't know if she'll trust me on the Szechuan peppercorns though.
Yeah. You have to make a separate batch for yourself then. That's all.
But no, I love buttermilk, and if you get it with the active cultures in it, you're doing the same thing. It's the same thing as yogurt or coffee.
Yeah, get that in there, Dan, and I've got to sop up all that other delicious, nutritious stuff you're talking about.
Yeah, I haven't even gotten to the gravy. I haven't even gotten to the gravy yet. The gravy's the porn part. No, I'm not going to say that because I'll ruin too
many. Tell me all about your gravy.
No. I was just going to say the gravy's the money shot. And then I just realized how many Thanksgiving meals I just ruined. I mean it's nothing fancy, just you know a little dark blonde roux and pan drippings off the turkey, and I just sit there and boil the turkey neck forever, until you got this concentrated beautiful brown wonder, and then take the turkey meat off and chop it up real fine and work it in there and. And some mushrooms too.
Slightly gelatinous with the roux and the drippings, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's almost like you've almost made a classic roux at I can't remember how to say it.
Yeah, I know. I can't say it either, but that's exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
but now you've done something to me, Rich.
What did I do to you?
You got me thinking. There,
Mirepoix. That's what it's called. Mirepoix.
My mother used to do these, and this is the 50s, 60s housewife mom kind of thing. I think it probably goes back into the 40s and 30s.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when Jell-O came out, it was like the universal solvent.
Right.
It was the philosopher's stone. It was all things to all people. But she used to make this congealed salad. One of them was made with orange Jell-O, and it had shredded carrot and cottage cheese and pineapple in it.
Mmm.
And that was delicious.
Oh, that sounds good. Yes.
The other one was weirder, though. It was some sort of red Jell-O, maybe cherry. But she would put crushed whole fresh cranberries in it, like grind them up.
Right.
And celery and walnuts.
She did the same thing with the celery, ground it up?
No, the celery was kind of, finely chopped.
Okay.
And the walnuts were finely chopped. But cranberries are so damn hard. I think she'd boil them for a little bit or something and then crush them.
Yeah.
And that thing just had an amazing flavor. And I've been through her recipe box, and I can't find it. And I'm going to have to go digging around. Especially the orange one was always my favorite. Oh, it was so good.
What was on that one?
Well, that was the cottage cheese. That was with cottage cheese and shredded carrot and pineapple. And then the last thing, everybody else does pumpkin pie. I do in memory of my dad's mother on Christmas and Thanksgiving. And really only that time of year, I do her banana pudding. With my little tweaks to it. But the thing with her banana pudding was that while all the other church ladies were using vanilla wafers, Granny used Lorna Doones.
Oh boy!
The little squares of shortbread that are so sweet and yummy and rich and fatty. And so instead of vanilla wafers, she made them with Lorna Doones. I've taken it a step further. Instead of vanilla pudding, I buy the flan mix that you cook.
Yeah, sure.
So I put in a layer of the Lorna Doones, and then cut on a layer of bananas, and then I take the little caramel packet that comes with the flan, and drizzle that across the bananas.
Oh!
And then the flan, and then more bananas, and
Oh my God!
What's left of the flan, and then put a lid of Lorna Doones on top of that.
It's, yeah, no wonder you're a diabetic. Come on.
But I'm not anymore. I'm not. I just will be by the end of the holidays again. And that's true. Kid Mark in the chat room just reminded me, not everybody makes pumpkin pie. Some make sweet potato pie. And oh my God, I'll never forget, years ago, Lottie up in Massachusetts gave me a recipe for brandy sweet potato pie. Oh. Holy cow, it was wonderful. And you know, no cheating. This came. You started with whole, real, honest to God sweet potatoes and roasted them, and then you pureed them in the with the and they baked them. And the holy God, it was good. And then some brandy went in somewhere in the process. And I think the years I made it, some brandy went in the cook too.
There you go. Well, you're backing off from that tradition, is what you're telling me.
Oh, I'm not drinking.
Oh, that's good.
I have to not drink. I just have to.
No diabetic or pre-diabetic or possibly could be a diabetic again person should drink alcohol. I mean, it like, you know what?
I sure do.
Concentrated sugar.
God, I miss it sometimes. Oh,
I do too sometimes. Honestly, I have to say I do sometimes too, but. Yeah, but pure sugar.
That sweet potato pie was amazing.
Yeah, wow.
And it was really cool because I used white sweet potatoes instead of the typical ones, so the sweet potato pie wasn't all orangey and like easily mistaken for pumpkin pie.
Right.
It was good. Damn, it was good. Damn, it was good. And then, I was going to mention something earlier. You said you battled with depression, and that was one of the kindest things anybody's ever said to me, Rich.
Wow.
That this program has, you know, helped pull you through some of those funks. And it's funk.
It has a lot to do with the company I have around me. I mean, everybody around me pretty much is conservative, and I feel like I'm, you know, a lost boy crying in the wilderness. You know, a lot of times. And I put you on TuneIn, and it makes me feel like I'm not alone anymore. You know? I give you all credit for that, Bob.
Well, I thank you. And I was going to commiserate for a minute because for some reason or another, you know, Saturday was gray and everything, but yesterday, but I was busy with the turkey and everything, and yesterday was just cold and But where Saturday had been tolerable and I was running around in shirt sleeves and just a pair of jeans, no coat, anything like that.
Right.
Yesterday, it was rainy and gray and shitty and cold and gray and miserable and gray. And I felt it. I mean, I could feel it as a cerebro biological presence. I was depressed as fuck all day yesterday. And I thought, my God, I can't imagine what it would be for this to just be every blessed day. It's horrible. Because, you know, one of the things that's messing with me right now is this cervical radiculopathy. That's the official term for it.
Right.
It's my ruined neck and nerve impingement down my right arm.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, I've been very lucky insofar as, you know, I've never had a surgery. I've never broken a bone.
Thank God. Thank whatever force exists in the universe.
But so, you know, aches, pains, sure, bad knees, whatever. Yeah. But, you know, to just have pain that stays and never, ever, ever goes away.
Yeah, I have that with the neuropathy.
I think it was taking a toll on me yesterday because I was really, really active on Saturday. And, you know, I was just grim. It was
do you suffer
grim.
From when you're on the internet radio talking to the folks out here or filibustering with us? I don't sense you feel that way. I sense you're a whole different person, upbeat, really want to connect, you know?
You know, when I'm out and around in the world, I try to be pleasant and genial and stuff. But you know, it's easy to get worried about things. I mean,
sure,
I worry constantly because this format that we've chosen, I don't mean that mouse in my pocket. I mean the community that we put together.
Right.
And everybody and so many people do so much to keep it all going. But I'm in a constant state of worry because I've got this bill to pay, that bill to pay,
right.
The other bill to pay. And
you have to constantly fundraise. It's got to take a toll on you.
Well, it's a grind.
You have to constantly fundraise. Yeah.
It's a bear. But it's what we've got, and it's you know, it's worked for 12 years. But that can prey on you. And Ferg and I tried to get out last night and just drove around, you know, went over to Beckley. We were going to go to, and we got to Beckley and he looks up and goes, "I ain't into it, Dad." And I said, "I'm not into it either. Let's don't." And turned around and went home.
There you go.
And got in bed and just kind of hoped, you know, it's like, you know, I got in bed, started reading it, and just hoped that today would be better. There was some sun in the sky today and I was okay. I was okay. But Sunday, oh, brutal.
Are you medicated at all for depression or not?
Oh, no.
Good for you.
And I mean, I don't say
that
emphatically.
I wish I could say the same.
I know I've been through bouts of it from time to time.
Right.
And bouts of absolutely crippling stress. I mean, crippling stress.
Right.
Massive panic attacks for a few years.
And you've never been medicated for any of that?
No.
Oh, good for you.
When the panic and the stress hit, I went to one doctor who gave me a prescription for Xanax.
Nice.
And he said, when the panic attack hits, what I want you to do is I want you to chew up one of these and stick it under your tongue until the panic attack goes away, and then I want you to spit it out.
Right.
Oh, I tried that, but still, my head got a little sideways, and I couldn't take it.
Well, you're better off without having to take the medication, that's for sure.
And way, yeah. way back when, I found an herb, and I don't know, for all I know, it's poison or something. But I found an herb that's used in the South Pacific in the Polynesian culture called kava kava, K-A-V-A.
Yeah, I heard of that. Yeah, I heard of that.
And
I thought that was prescribed for male impotence. I didn't know that. I don't remember.
I mean, I used it for like 2 years. It was for anxiety, chill you out, whatever.
Did it work?
And then I just didn't have to take it anymore.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
And there was no Jones in or anything like that.
I really would like to be able to like face like you are now without taking the medication, but I'm just not there right now, Bob. I wish I was, but I'm just not there. You know, and I really believe people are better off because it toughens you up in life to be able to like not to have to self-medicate to face life on life's terms.
But right now, if there was some, I mean, I hate to say that I have any sympathy for him, but the story was, you know, back when Flush Flimball got busted for sending his maid out with a cigar box with $10,000 in it, and she came back with $10,000 worth of opioids.
Right.
He blamed it on an injury to his neck that he got while golfing.
Right.
And, you know, I am.
But he's still.
But he's still a dick.
Privilege. Yeah, he's still a dick. But it's still, he tried to take.
But I do understand that because if I wasn't afraid that if I took something like that, I'd just be more of a blithering idiot on the air than I already am.
Right.
At this point in time, a month and a half without a single pain-free day, I'd do it.
Yeah.
But I can't, you know, I made a promise long ago to never do Limbaugh Radio, which means that I can't come on here with a belly full of opioids and, because maybe that's why he talks the way he does. I don't know. Who knows?
No, you're right. He's just a dick. I'm not going to blame it on the medication or whatever illness he has. He's just a dick. I mean, you know, I'm very depressed. I have a lot of physical problems. And I really try to be a good person still. You know? I mean, that's just, I think people
Well, it's pretty obvious you
choose.
Are.
Thank you. People choose to be the way they are. People choose to be mean or they choose to be nice. You know? There's no gene that makes you mean or makes you nice. It's a conscious choice to try to be a real human being, like the Indians were, right? You know, the Indians were, they referred to themselves as a real human being, you know? And they tried to make allowance for a lot of settlers that came along, but they saw that most of the settlers just weren't up to being real human beings, you know? And, real human beings, it's a hard level to achieve for anybody. We are conditioned in this culture not to be real human beings. We're conditioned to be kind of dicks.
Well, and we're conditioned to think that there's some sort of network standard normal that we all ascribe to,
right?
That nobody ever achieves.
Exactly.
One of the things, Richard, that I think attends our media saturated culture is that we are constantly bombarded with false impressions of how people really are. Look, I mean, consider the sex abuse stories out there. People are not who they appear to be behind the microphone or on the tube. I mean, you know, my life is not 24 hours of doing the program.
I know that. You got a full life, Bob, and God
bless.
Significant
portions of my life are comprised of swearing a lot.
What are you telling me? Got Asperger's syndrome?
No, I've just got dirt. I've just got dirty word Tourette's. But we're given these ideas that especially people who pay attention to the news, you know, because we watch all these news readers and all these hosts and all these people talking to other people, and nobody ever picks their nose, and nobody ever farts on stage, and
right.
And or on the set.
And they all look perfectly coiffed and beautiful and no blemishes of any kind.
And that's impossible.
Yeah, you're right.
And, you know, with a few exceptions, you never see anybody from the waist down.
That's true.
If they just sit there at the desk, they could be wearing Bermuda shorts for all you know. As long as the guy has the dress shirt and the necktie and the jacket, if he's got a goddamn grass skirt on and you never see it, you don't know. I mean, that's the running gag that I make about doing naked radio here. It's radio, so if you want to imagine me naked, God knows why you do, but you're welcome to.
Exactly. You know, I'm that racial motto, which you're still on Air America Radio before that abomination went under. And nothing's changed about it at all. The way she wears her hair, the choice of color she wears. I mean, she's always in black on the set. You know, she was when I met her. The hair was the same, you know. I mean, I don't know how she does it. How you have that same persona always? And now I'm not. And I think she's a genuine, authentic human being because I met her. She shook my hand. She was very kind, you know, very, very sociable. It was nice, you know. But then you see her on the show, and she looks exactly the same every night. For 8 years she's been on now. Now, I know, you know, I mean, I don't know how people do it. They're,
and, you know, like that, but I mean, that's nice because that's just the uniform.
Yeah,
Johnny Cash wore black every night. Makes things kind of easy. Black is slimming. You know, there's a reason that priests just wear black, you know, unless you move way up the hierarchy and you get to start wearing lace house coats and red dresses.
Yes, it's the uniform. It is uniform. That's what it is.
And in many ways, we're really going to go off down a different road if you got a minute now, Rich.
Sure. I ain't going nowhere.
I've been thinking, you know, with the sex abuse and gender issues, and I first started thinking about this back when Bernie and Hillary debated. And he came out in his rumpled, disheveled, two-piece suit with a white shirt and a boring tie.
Right.
And she walked out in a banana suit. because I remember thinking that night, wait a minute.
Working the crowd. Working the crowd.
No, no, no. If the roles were reversed and she had walked out in a frumpy, dumpy jacket and pants with a plain white shirt and some sort of tie, bow, whatever.
Right.
She, because she is a woman, would have been pilloried.
That's true. Pillory, for, Hillary. That's right.
For the shabbiness of her appearance.
Yeah, yep. You're right. That's right.
On the other hand, part of the game. If Bernie had walked out in a two-piece suit that was in a neon shade of Chiquita banana, he would never have been taken seriously as a politician again.
Right.
And so what I'm trying to process through is the genderization of color.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This, you know, you can go off, you can go off into the broader fields of fashion, and that's fine. I mean, me, I got big old broad shoulders, and it used to come down to a respectable waist. Now it's pretty much a straight line. I look better in a double-breasted suit jacket than I do a single-button suit jacket.
Sure.
I just do.
Yeah.
Because it hides more.
Right.
But they're out of fashion right now, so tough shit.
Right.
But the larger issue, the genderizing of color.
Right.
That there are some colors that women can have access to, but men can't. And I'll tell you the particulars of where this comes from. We're coming up on winter, and I hate being cold.
Yeah, well.
And we don't have a furnace in this house, so we area heat. And in the vicious depths of an Appalachian hillbilly winter, there's a few weeks there when you're just not going to be warm.
Right.
And there are a few weeks where Agnes and me in our bedroom, when we wake up, even with an electric space heater going, the temperature in the room is going to be 40 degrees.
Right.
So we sleep under like Arctic rated sleeping bags and stuff.
Right.
But with the advances in modern technology, the lightness of something like a down shirt or a down sweater, something like that. And I love Patagonia because they've got an awesome environmental justice commitment. 1% of all their profits go to grassroots organizations. They don't go to like big greens. It goes to grassroots organizations. So I was looking around. I was looking around at Patagonia. And I was looking at their down stuff, and of course it's brutally expensive, so ain't gonna happen. But I noticed that even with their social consciousness, and this is not a criticism, it's just an observation, even with their social consciousness, they've still got genderized color. Guys get gray and black and
dark blue.
There are some different shades of blue. There's a couple of greens, but only over in the women's section do you get purples, berries, pinks. Oh, pink! You know, and pink is the big one. You know, it's the only color I know of that will actually castrate a man. Now, there's the second neutering reference of the evening. It's not like it's a thing, but
right.
But this idea that we're somehow going to delineate genders based on color is bullshit.
Right.
At least, I'm guessing it would be bullshit in future Star Trek world. You know, I didn't notice Deanna Troi running around. No, there was gold and there was burgundy and there was green and there was blue. And if you were going to, and if you didn't have a line, you got a red shirt and you were going to fucking die. In that episode,
right?
So, you know, as we talk about all these things, and as we can, like, what happened with that asshole in Manassas. All of these, you know, issues of gender, issues of enforcement of gender are, I think, subject and open to question. And you know what? One of these days, maybe somebody will be able to, some man will be able to walk onto a debate stage in a bright yellow Chiquita banana suit and will not immediately lose every shred of credibility that he has.
But that
not,
would be,
but not
that
now.
Would be nice.
Not
that
now.
Would be, I think we're still a little away from that. Bob, I'm sorry, you know, I think we're at least 10 years away from that still. I don't know why.
I think we're 100 years away from that.
All right. Probably, maybe I'm being too optimistic about it, but I everything you said rings with truth about the genderization of color, and now it's phony. I mean, that's one of the reasons why black people in this culture are demonized even more than they already were. I mean, black men don't have any problems wearing colors. I see around where I live in a very urban area. And you see more men, at first I thought it was kind of weird, but men have no trouble around where I live wearing, black men have no trouble wearing oranges.
Some of that's complexion. It really is. A pale pink person that I am, probably not going to look very good in a bright green suit. But the same. But there's also different cultural traditions related to color.
Exactly. And I think that, you're right on both points about complexion and color. You know, I mean, I come from a cultural background that loves color. I mean, I'm Italian. The Italians love color. I mean, Italian food is a riot of color. You know, we get very, very emotional. We're in between complexion-wise, between white and... I say this all the time to my family. Don't forget, we're only like 100 miles. The bottom of the boot's only 100 miles from Tripoli. You know, and they go crazy when I bring it, because they didn't even want to contemplate the possibility there could have been racial mixing at that level.
Kind of obvious that there was.
Not to them, it's not. I mean, the Romans were definitely very similar to...
Sicily was settled by the Greeks.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
So was the southern part of Italy.
Exactly.
And then it was, and then it was the crossroads of invasion during the Middle Ages, and ultimately...
Ultimately, it was Spain. Spain was actually the crossroads.
Well, I mean...
The Straits of Gibraltar was where Moors came over.
Right, but it's a short trip from the Iberian Peninsula over to the Italian Peninsula.
That is true. Very true.
The Romans even went so far as to build a damn road to make it easy for them.
That's right. And parts of it still exist to this day, which is wonderful when you consider the shape of the roads we got around where I am. I'll tell you that. I don't imagine you have great roads there, but our roads are in a constant state of disrepair here. And our former governor, the one that's about to go out in January, he really didn't care about infrastructure. Like most Republicans, he didn't care about infrastructure. Tax breaks to the rich, and that's it. What else is new?
There we go. I mean, look, Dr. Bill, if you catch his broadcast on the download, was talking today about the meaning of the word reform versus what these Republicans are talking about when they call for tax reform. And he said, reform is supposed to be taking a form and reimpose it. A form loses its shape, and to reform it is to impose a shape, a structure back upon it as a form of beneficial change. And really, letting people deduct their private aircraft fuel costs, but elementary school teachers who dig into their own pockets to buy supplies for their students can't, that is not beneficial change.
No, that's what we used to talk about in biology class, more like catabolism. It's you know, eating the structure inside out. You know, it's reductio ad absurdum. You know, it's
But there's a more fundamental problem with this so-called tax reform. And that is that I have not seen, as I've said before, I have yet to see a billionaire with his face pressed up against the window pane, you know, fogging it up and staring through the window at the happy little middle class people in there ruining his fucking life.
Right.
I mean, I don't see any evidence that the billionaires are taking it on the chin. Life seems to be working out pretty well for them in light of the fact that over the last 50 years, they've concentrated more wealth under their control than ever in human history.
Yeah, but when you're talking about trickle-down economics, like we're talking about again, yet again, that's not even part of the discussion, okay? It's always about those with much will bless us with a small piece of the action. Just give them all they want, and they will reward you with a small piece of the action. And it's a lie. It's been a lie since the 80s. But they're still continuing to recycle that idea.
But the thing is, maybe it's hard for rational people to get their heads around this, because rational people. But we're not talking about scientific or even quasi-scientific theory when we're talking about trickle-down economics. We're talking about an article of faith, okay? You were raised in the Roman Catholic tradition, and I hope you won't be offended, but it's an article of faith, like believing that cracker turns into Jesus in your tummy.
Well, sure. I mean, that's it. The transubstantiation. It was all about the transubstantiation. Yeah. That was the whole
it can't be questioned whether it does or doesn't. Can't be questioned. It's like the Mormons believing that Joseph Smith using rocks in a hat translated the Book of Mormon from something called Reformed Egyptian, a language that never goddamned existed. But science and reality in those circumstances, Richard, don't matter. It is an article of faith, and because it is an article of faith, you cannot challenge it and be part of their club. So to be a Republican, even one of those that's bold and says mean things to Donald Trump and then votes exactly like Donald Trump wants him to do, you know, like Jeff Flake and John McCain and Bob Corker, they believe in trickle down economics because they're Republicans, and they're Republicans because they believe in trickle down economics.
Right. So it's strictly an article of faith. It doesn't have any reason or logic behind it. It's strictly an article
and,
of faith.
And it is unquestionable.
Well, for them, it's unquestionable.
Right. Well, but that's because that's one of the rules of their cult.
Right.
Okay. The Protestant Reformation happened, among other things, over ideas of the infallibility of the Pope when he speaks as the Pope. You know, it's not like the Pope never gets a crossword puzzle wrong. Okay.
Right.
It's when he is speaking as the Pope, he is infallible. And when they got to the point where they just openly said, "Nope, sorry," well, they weren't Roman Catholics anymore.
Right.
Because you cannot challenge articles of faith and remain in the cult. And I'm not using cult like, you know, Moonies or Hare Krishnas here. I'm using it in its anthropological sense.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, I have no problem being a liberated, recovering ex-Catholic, accepting of putting Roman Catholicism into the framework of a cult. I think it is a cult. I think all organized religions are a cult.
All religions are cults. They start out as personal cults. They move to shamanistic cults. They then become community cults. And eventually they wind up, if they're successful, as ecclesiastical cults. But they are all cults.
But the foundation, ancient tradition that I used to like practice until I got sick, I still honor it and respect it. That I don't think is a cult goes back to the paganism of the Wiccan Reed.
No, I mean, from an anthropological standpoint, Richard,
right.
You have to go back to the term of art, meaning of cult. It's not a pejorative. It's not an insult. It's
right,
just you know, the cult of Isis, the cult of Mithras, yeah, the cult of Cybele. Those are all cults.
Yeah, but all cults are out of balance. That's the principal problem with them, because they rely too much upon a personification or actual deification of an existing human being as being the groundswell of their existence and their practice. But when you talk about ancient paganistic practices like Wicca, for example, it's really they only use terms like Lord and Lady to symbolize active and passive principles in the universe, and the seasons. You know, the seasons being in balance in nature and rotating like a wheel and having a cross quarter.
Okay. And there's a great example, Richard. A great example.
Right.
You cannot be a climate change denying Wiccan.
No, I don't. No, I've never met one, and I don't think I ever will. Because I can see a lot. Bob, when I was in my late teens, I remember the whole winter would be snowstorms constantly. We built igloos in our backyard, for Christ's sakes, and they'd be up for weeks and months at a time. We don't have winters like that here anymore. We haven't had winters like that in 30, 40 years. And yet people still complain, it's too cold. It's January and it's 35 degrees. Oh, it's too cold. What do you want? It's January. We live in a temperate climate. It's supposed to be this way. The earth is fallow, waiting to reignite itself in the spring again to fecundity, to start the cycle of life all over again. You can't have that if it's 75 degrees in January. It's not going to happen. It's tilting the wheel. It's taking the wheel out of balance. But they don't see that. They can't understand that. It's probably the same even in West Virginia. You probably wouldn't. As cold as it is, you probably remember winters being even worse when you were younger.
The first 18 years of my life, I wasn't here steadily.
Oh, where were you?
But I was growing up in Alabama.
Oh, okay.
And but we would, you know, back when long distance was brutally expensive.
Yeah, I remember.
My mother would, you know, when it was snowing, my grandmother would always get on the phone and tell me that it was snowing, because growing up where I was growing up, snow was something that happened. You know, if we got a 2-inch snow, that was a blizzard. They declared martial law and it took 3 days for the bread trucks to get back in and the milk trucks to get back in, because the bread, right, milk, and eggs were all fucking gone, because I guess you eat French toast.
Exactly. With the mountaintop removal you got going down there in your neck of the woods, you can see very clearly the ecological disasters going on now, how climatically, dramatically it's being altered. I'm sure of that.
And that's the thing. You don't even have to talk about climate change to talk about that.
Right.
You can just talk about how deadly it is to the people. Even if climate change wasn't real, mountaintop removal would still be deadly to the people who live near it.
Right.
But the larger there are fluctuations in weather, sure, but there are scientists who do things that ordinary people don't know how to do, like take ice cores from Greenland.
Yeah, or the Antarctic, right?
And you can't just write it off to, well, you know, these things are you know, in a wave form and they're seasonal. No.
Because, well, now you have science. You have science instead of superstition.
But again, back to the cult.
Yeah.
You can't acknowledge that science and be a member of the Republican cult.
Right. Yeah.
Least not a member in good standing. I mean, there's a climate change caucus, and it has exactly as many Republican members as it has Democratic members. That's for
and
a
how
reason.
Many is that?
Oh, I think they're up to 12 or something.
So they actually have six. You're saying they have
there may be more than six, but the thing is, those are Republicans who are slightly heretic.
Right. They're the ones that are never going to be president.
Well, that too, and they come from places. Okay, here's one for you, because I know you'll despise this name, Daryl Issa.
I actually do despise him.
he's a member of the Climate Change Caucus.
Oh, well, that's just for him. Have the have
because
the
he
lives in California.
He's in a district where even though it's the Republican majority, he has to acknowledge climate change, or he right. won't get to be a congressman anymore.
Right. There's enough of a minority coalition there that'll hook up with.
And there's even whatever. And there's even some Republicans who do. And you know what? There's rich Republicans in California who are participating in the climate change economy and doing quite well, thank you very much.
But they will not make any noise in the larger economy.
No, because they're drowned out.
They won't stand up. That's sad. That is really sad. And yet they're not a profit off of it. It's so basically I can't even come up with the right word for it. I'll go disgusting. It's just disgusting that they are like that. That they will that. I feel that you should have the personal integrity to be willing to put your position online to embrace the truth. I must be crazy.
Look what happened in Nebraska today. I don't know if you saw this or not, but
no, I didn't hear about what happened. I know what's up. What happened?
The Keystone Pipeline got okayed. The Keystone XL pipeline got okayed on a
210,000 barrel
spill
the other day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, they got to be crazy.
But they approved it on a 3-2 vote, the Public Service Commission of Nebraska. And before they could vote, the law was changed a few years back to make sure that the Public Service Commission of Nebraska were forbidden from considering evidence of spills and toxic releases and and industrial disasters. They couldn't even take the recent spill in South Dakota. They could not take that into account in determining whether or not to let that pipeline go through.
That's just monstrous. I'm going to have to take a shower when I get off the phone with you. That's how dirty I'm feeling right now.
Well, that's because I'm Bob Kincaid, little ray of sunshine. Intents and purposes, yes. Because again, it is an article of faith that climate change is not real because oil companies must be able to make money.
Right. But the part where you're talking about where the faith comes in, isn't that basically like they're all Dominionists?
That's something that they will use.
Mm-hmm.
They will use Dominionism. They'll say, well, you know, look right there in Genesis. It says we're to take dominion over the earth. I guess that means we can shit all over it. And then they do. And they say, see, God didn't strike us dead for that.
Well, you know.
I'm told I have to stop. Rich, I'm told I have to stop you're making told. You laugh.
I'm not laughing now. Whoever said that, thank you. despite all of this severe retardation of human consciousness we're talking about here, I still feel uplifted by what you do. I mean, it is better to be a conscious human being and acknowledge everything that's around good and bad than to live in a dream world of only looking at and fantasizing about what you think is real. Take in the whole picture, guys. We all got to take in the whole picture. That's the only way we can do anything effectively to change anything that's detrimental to that whole picture of human and Gaia survival. You know, we got to take it all in.
I think you're right. It's like the writer Tom Robbins said in Still Life with Woodpecker. He said, one of the, you know, his most fundamental rule, everything is part of it.
Exactly. Well, basic Buddhism.
Yeah, it really is. Hey, by the way, I've got to take a time out here, Richard. Stand by. Just wait. I got to pass out a cowbell there for Brother Deacon Asa. You'll enjoy this.
Oh, okay.
A few minutes ago when we were talking about the tax reform, I said, I don't see billionaires taking it on the chin. Brother Deacon Asa replied, oh, trust me, Donald Trump takes Daddy Putin on the chin every time they meet privately.
Oh, God, I'm never going to get that image out of my head now. Thank you so much, Mr. Kincaid.
Yeah, Donald Trump. He's a Balchinian.
A teabagger.
Absolutely.
Oh, God. The only thing left to do is laugh about it all.
Well, you know what?
We laugh and we rise up and we're able to go
and do it again today.
Think globally.
Or do it again. What we did today to do it again tomorrow.
I am so glad, Bob, that you know, despite all your travails, you're still here for us. You know, thank you so much.
I'd be lost if you know. Trust me, I don't want to. Welcome to Walmart. Now, that ain't me. And I don't think you know. I couldn't do a Walmart job. We make our jokes and everything. I couldn't do a Walmart job. People who work at Walmart are brutalized.
Yeah,
I couldn't stand on my feet for 8 solid hours.
No, I know I can't. Oh, no, there's no way. My feet are murder. Even just sitting down at the computer talking to you right now, the pins and needles are lacerating my feet. But you know why I've been talking to you? I wasn't thinking about it at all. Thank you for allowing me to have an hour plus of conversation with you, almost an hour and a half of conversation with you, where I got out of myself and I'm connecting with another human being. I like the natives would say, a real human being. You are a real human being, Bob. Thank you for being who you are.
Thank you, Rich. That is so kind. That is kind beyond my ability to thank you for it. And it goes, you know, it's a big part of, you know. There's no footlights here, and there's not a room out in front of me, and so that means a lot. That means a lot. I and your laughter and the joyful eagerness that you participate in bring to the conversation. I can't thank you enough, Richard. You have yourself a wonderful, wonderful evening. And
I will be listening to you for the rest of the week with my usual intensity, and I hope to always learn something from you, Bob. And thank you so much for your loving kindness.
Thank you,
Rich.
You
have a great evening.
You too. Take care now. All right.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. That's our buddy Rich in New Jersey. And, you know, that's another one of those examples of what conversation radio means. Yeah, I saw that the White Rose stream croaked again. I got it started again. I don't know what the hell's going on. I wish it wouldn't go on that way, but I'm powerless. Clarity says, I have a deep fear of being on someone else's clock. Don't be afraid. But I understand what, I think I understand what you mean, Clarity. Note coming in from Alma. Oh, by the way, thanks to Keith. Keith, thank you very kindly. You got us started this evening. We're down to $165 to go for fundraising. And we've got, 23 minutes to make up $165. Thank you, Keith. Thank you for being there. Thanks to all of our subscribers. Thanks to everybody who keeps all of this going. I wish, you know, bigger organization, who knows how we'd thank you. But right now, I'll just thank you here on the air. Note coming in from Alma. Per Rich, eating from the inside out. This has to be a strategy of breaking down this country using Caucasian versus every other color and then all the accusations from women coming forward with their experiences. These are real issues. However, we are being manipulated and following their playbook. We are consuming each other to where there will be utter destruction. Add in this religionism, so to speak, it's working to divide and destroy. This has gone too far. Trying to put this stuff into words is not enough space or time to dissect any of this. I'm reeling, like all the others, to dismantle our society. It seems to be working. I'm unable to put this into the words that are needed. Too many issues. This country is being destroyed from within by those who have no soul, conscience, or heart. Greed and power seem to be the ultimate destruction. I'm so saddened by human nature and those moneyed ghouls.
And that's another one of those word of the night. Ghouls. Halloween is long past, but the ghouls are with us. And they've got little R's after their names. And just ghouls? Here's ghouls. By next month, three states and the District of Columbia will run out of CHIP funds. The Children's Health Insurance Program. They will not have the money. And frankly, speaking of ghouls, Mitch McConnell couldn't care less, and neither could Paul Ryan. Among other things, they let it expire in the first place. 9 million children are at risk of losing their health care coverage. 9 million. Those three states where and D.C., Arizona, Minnesota, and North Carolina will run out of funds by next month. 31 states will be completely out of money by March of 2018. I think this fits very nicely with what Alma just wrote. When a country finally begins to address the health care needs of its children, and then backs out on that commitment, what is there to say about that country? How many choruses of God Bless the USA can Lee Greenwood sing before we realize it's all a hollow fraud? How many football players who stand and not kneel for the national anthem can do that before we realize it's a hollow fraud? Symbolism is only that. It has its power, but only if it is reflective of a greater underlying reality. And I don't care how many Make America Great Again hats Tangerine Tiberius sells. It's not going to change the fact that he isn't out there busting the Congress's ass, telling them to get the CHIP program reauthorized, or precious Ivanka, who's so worried about children's issues. She's not out there hollering for this. Has she said anything about it even once? I don't know. If she did, she whispered it. CHIP's been around since 1997. It's been around 20 years. And the Republicans let it die. You might recall from last week that clip of poor old Orrin Hatch, who got poked in the tender place. Sherrod Brown said, okay, fine, you say it's great, let's start with CHIP. Let's do it right now. And immediately Orrin Hatch said, we're not going to do it right now. Fuck those children. And ye shall know them by their fruits. Hey, it's Charlie. Hey, Charlie.
How you doing, Bob?
Pretty good. How about you?
Okay, I guess. I was just calling to... Did you see that on... there was a YouTube thing about Kay Ivey saying that she had no doubt that Roy Moore had, basically...
Yeah, Jesus. Yeah, I almost left her out of the Moran mix. Kay Ivey, who became governor of Alabama because Robert Bentley, the deacon from the First Baptist Church of Tuscaloosa and governor of the state, said with a cell phone sitting around recording his every word that he loved to squeeze the breastises of a woman who was not his wife. And so he wound up not being governor anymore. And Kay Ivey has said she has no doubt about the truth of the accusations that the women who have talked about their experiences with Roy Moore, she has no truth
or no doubt about the truth of their accusations, but she, as a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, ammo-sexual, Christian Republican, is going to go and pull the lever for Roy Tolamore. Is that what you're talking about?
Yep.
Yeah, because he's going to vote the right way on tax reform. And lo and behold,
we got to have the right judges appointed to the Supreme Court, too.
You know, sometimes when a white person says that, sometimes I wonder if they're not just saying, one of these days we're going to get some judges that are going to give them all back to us and let us have them, let us own them again.
I tell you what, I am shocked at the way things are going right now. I mean, it just, I wouldn't do anything like that. I mean, I can't believe it. It's almost like we got the Ku Klux Klan running this country right now.
Almost?
Well, I guess we do. I guess it's gone that far. And that is a crying shame. I've never seen a country go to shit as fast as this one has. It's been less than a year, and this country is just, I don't know what's going to happen. And you get these stupid-ass farmers up in Nebraska and places like that. Well, if they'd let him just be president, well, they're letting him be president, and they're too stupid to see what he's doing. And, you know, I mean, it's almost like, I don't know. I can't believe we have that many people in this country that are that damn dumb. I can't believe it.
Well, the funniest part of it is that Nebraska, Charlie, could actually be instructive because it was one of those places where Native people and Republicans and environmentalists and Democrats came together to oppose that fucking pipeline. But the legislature, yeah. Republicans, you know, they've got a unicameral House in Nebraska, I think. It's kind of weird. They don't have a Senate in the House. They just got one legislative body. They monkey wrenched the system so that the Public Service Commission couldn't even consider the well-being of the citizens of Nebraska relative to things like spills and explosions and things that TransCanada has proven that their pipelines do.
And, you know, there are people that I have worked with, people that are prejudiced. And I remember back whenever I was a contractor at the IRS in Memphis, Tennessee, there was a guy talking about how American Indians were just trash. You could build them a place to live and they'd tear it apart. And then he started talking about going to the drag races up in Bristol, Tennessee. And I looked at him and I said, you do realize you're going to the Appalachian Mountains? And he said, yeah. I said, well, you better watch what you say, because you're going to be talking about somebody's aunt or uncle or husband or wife, and you're not going to know you're doing it. Because, you know,
nice work, Charlie.
It's quite common for, huh?
Nice work.
And, you know, I mean, it's quite common up in the mountains for, you know, people of Native American heritage to marry people of Anglo heritage. Nobody cares.
Well, what happened was that during the forced removal, Jackson's attempt at genocide, there were mostly Cherokee people who hit up the hollers. And they did. They married into white families because they didn't want to leave. And tried to hang on to as much of their life ways as they possibly could.
Well, the people of Anglo heritage and the people of Cherokee heritage that have married, they seem to be pretty happy with each other. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just Appalachia.
You know, yeah, and, you know, I thought, you know, whenever that guy started talking like that, and then he said he was going to go up to Bristol, Tennessee to watch the drag races. It was like, dude, I don't think you know what you're, what you're getting ready to get into unless you keep your mouth shut.
Golly Moses.
And it, and you know, it just, and whenever I worked at Kelly Air Force Base in San Antonio, I used to work with a guy from Minnesota, and he just, he would badmouth the people of Hispanic heritage, just something fierce. And I never could understand that, you know. But I know there's people like that, but, you know, it seems like that it's just growing by leaps and bounds right now. People don't have enough sense to wake up and say, hey, we're all humans, we're all in this together. And they just don't think that way anymore. They, you know, they're, I don't know what it is. Evidently, they've just been hiding it for a long time, and now they think it's time to bring it out in the open. I don't know.
Well,
it's sad.
No, this kind of, you know, Alma's email has a point. We've been turned upon ourselves. And it's been, our politics has been the weapon of choice, but our differences, which really aren't as great as they're made out to be, have been the ammunition. And it has been, and that weapon and that ammunition has largely been turned on white folks in this country. They have been, they've been weaponized. Look at,
yeah, but
you know,
you've got
look
to
look
be
at Kay Ivey.
I'm sorry.
Kay Ivey.
Yeah.
You know, look. 70 pastors, Charlie, in Alabama signed a letter. You remember that letter that Kayla Moore put out last week? It turned out it was bullshit because it was a more, it was a letter that had been put out previously that she just sort of cut and pasted and recopied and resubmitted. In other words, she's a liar. Well, 70 Alabama pastors from all kinds of different religions, like, 70 different religious leaders in Alabama signed a letter, and it's not getting nearly the play, but 70 Alabama pastors say no person of faith can, in good conscience, support Roy Moore. That's a pretty strong statement. That's just a little bit short of saying what I think desperately needs to be said. No one who votes for Roy Moore is a Christian.
Well, I tell you what, I think Christianity has gone from a way of life and a belief into something that's just a label, and everybody wants to have that label applied to them, but they don't want to live it. And, you know, that's a shame.
Well, it is. It absolutely is. Well, Charlie, I got to get out of here, my friend. I'm glad you called in. You always bring something good to the table. I do appreciate it.
Okie doke. Well, I appreciate what you're doing. Keep up the good work.
Thanks a lot, Charlie. You take care.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye.
And I had a question from Hung Like Jesus a little bit ago asking, what are the people up there in Appalachia that sort of look black and native? And yeah, that would be the Melungeons. And it's a case of intermixing and intermarrying, you know, not among races but among cultural groups as an effort toward cultural survival. I guess this is kind of an anti-Morian, but this is the letter that the religious leaders in Alabama published and isn't getting a lot of play, but should. So, you know, I'll do it here. Under ordinary circumstances, we clergy refrain from speaking directly about political candidates and only speak to issues, but these are not ordinary circumstances. Well, that means they're not Baptists, and you know, no, because they'll happily politic from the pulpit. Even before the recent allegations of sexual abuse, Roy Moore demonstrated that he was not fit for office and that his extremist values and actions are not consistent with traditional Christian values or good Christian character. He and politicians like him have cynically used Christianity for their own goals, but Roy Moore does not speak for Christianity, and he acts in ways that are contrary to our faith. Notice they said our faith, not his faith. Christianity affirms God's love for the neighbor and care for the most vulnerable in society, the widow, the foreigner, and the orphan. But he has denigrated people from other countries and other faiths. He opposes the expansion of Medicaid, which would provide basic health care for over 400,000 poor and working Alabamians. Christianity thrives in religious freedom from government interference and a government impartial toward people of all faith traditions, but instead, Moore has sought to entangle government with religion. It continues, Christianity rejoices in the truth and affirms the rights of abuse survivors to tell their stories without silencing. Christianity abhors sexual coercion and violence. We acknowledge that many people have been victims of sexual assault and abuse in our own places of worship. Clergy misconduct has done real and lasting harm both physically and spiritually. We repudiate the actions of religious and political leaders like Roy Moore, who have sought to silence, to cover up, and to be complicit in the sexual abuse. This letter... We do not make this statement lightly. We do so with much prayer and discernment. We believe no follower of Jesus Christ should be silent while the words of our Lord and Savior are perverted for partisan power, while our Bible is appropriated as a weapon for a false culture war, and while the name of our God is blasphemed by the hypocrisy of those who claim the name of Christ. Signed. Wow. United Methodist, United Church of Christ, United Methodist, United Church of Christ. There's a Baptist from Birmingham. Episcopalian, Lutheran, Presbyterian, Episcopal, Baptist. Go figure. These must not be Southern Baptists. I bet you they're not Southern Baptists. And United Church of Christ is not the Church of Christ. Doesn't allow pianos in the church or anything. No. That's not them. But they're from all over the state. Places like Gurley, Mountain Brook, Vestavia, Huntsville, Florence. We need more of that, frankly, if Christianity is going to have any relevance. And one last thing, and again, we finish up with $165 to go in fundraising. Sorry, just making sure Hook's known. Finally, I think she's one of those hypocrites and blasphemers, Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I think she has an abiding urge to be a kindergarten teacher. Because she came out and demanded that the White House press corps today tell who they're thankful for or what they're thankful for.
So, thanks, Sarah. I am thankful for the First Amendment.
Oh, yes. We're thankful for that.
Kelly and Conway today here.
Yeah, that was the big zinger. And then she said, I'm thankful for the policemen and the firefighters and our first responders and our military, Sarah did. And finally... she called on, after having created the rule that everybody had to be thankful for something, since this was going to be our last press briefing before the Thanksgiving holiday. And every reporter will say they're thankful for something. And so, most of the reporters said, "Well, I'm thankful for my children. I'm thankful for the soldiers. I'm thankful for the faith and religion. I'm thankful for my. I'm glad my spouse said yes to me and we got married." And then they came to Cecilia Vega, the senior White House correspondent for ABC. And she threw the turd in the punch bowl.
Thanks, Sarah. I am thankful for the First Amendment.
Oh, yes.
And Sarah just laughed. She looked like she just bit into a green persimmon. First Amendment.
Kelly and Conway today.
I think we all are.
Okay. Part of it, though.
Kelly and Conway. I went.
Did you catch that? It's a little bit lost there.
And Sarah Huckabee Sanders said, "Well, I think we all are."
No, you're not. Your goddamn boss says the press is the enemy of the people.
And all, but when she, it almost sneaks past if you didn't hear it. I think we all are. And somebody in the press corps said, "Yeah, but we're part of it."
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
That was a beautiful moment. Keith says, "Bob, it's become the generation of me. The only thing people seem to care about is what I can get, when I can get it, and where can I get it. I know that I catch myself on occasion doing the very same thing. It's very contagious. For my own desires, is it at times difficult to keep in check, whether the politics is causing it or something else that seems to be getting worse?" Meanwhile, Mike in Cascadia says, "Love Thy Neighbor. Great book. Love Thy Neighbor by the journalist Peter Moss. Book is about the Civil War in Yugoslavia in the 1990s. Peter Moss was interviewing Slobodan Milosevic, the architect of Muslim ethnic cleansing in Serbia. Moss quotes Milosevic in the book to the secret of Milosevic's success. He says, "You must imagine a USA with every little TV station everywhere taking the exact same editorial line." And Mike in Cascadia adds, "A line dictated by David Duke. You two would have war in 5 years." Mike says, "Prescient. And it was written in the 1990s. Wow. I think we'll end on that. That and Jason noting on of Sarah Huckabee Sanders. She's an idiot. I think that's perfect for ending Moran Monday. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to all of you who share in your precious finite time engaging in this little conversation. Thank you to all of you who support the program. Thank you. Thank you very kindly, one and all, to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room and to Midweek Utility Pinch Hit chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgia Stan. Thank you to our news ninjas. I was sorry to hear about the passing of your mom, Gene. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.